welcome to Living Downstream, the Environmental Justice Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Mencher. This season, we're looking at environmental racism across the country, and today that takes us to Houston, Texas.
America is segregated. Houston is segregated. And so is the pollution in America, and so is the pollution in Houston.
That's Dr. Robert Bullard, widely known as the father of environmental justice, and a member of the White House Advisory Council on the issue. We'll hear more from Dr. Bullard about this kind of structural racism and some solutions for it later in this episode. But first, it's important to know that there's no zoning in Houston, the nation's fourth largest city. That is, there are no city rules on how land is used. So it's common for industrial sites to operate next to communities of color and send environmental hazards right into their backyards. Producer Laura Eisensee takes the story from here.
Almost his whole life, Corinthian Giles has lived in this red and white house in Houston's Greater Fifth Ward. It's one of the city's oldest black communities, and it's just a few miles northeast of downtown. Corinthian is 13 years old, stocky, and a little shy. He likes to ride his four-wheeler up and down the streets.
I go outside, I play video games, and I have dogs, so I go feed them, and then I might play with them, and that's it.
He's the youngest of LaTanya Payne's five children. Though he's not her biological child, he's her niece's son. LaTanya has cared for Corinthian as his guardian since he was 2 weeks old. She still calls him by his nickname, Mister.
It had been a while since we had a baby around, and we were just spoiling him. We just let him have his way, so we just call him Mister, like you're in charge, like you're the big person around here. We do what you say.
One Sunday night, when he was 8 years old, Mister came into her room. He had played outside that afternoon and had a terrible pain in his hip. Mister doesn't like to talk about that time. LaTanya remembers it in detail.
He was in so much pain that he was crying, like real tears crying. You know, he went to sleep and then it went away. And then he was complaining again that it was still hurting a couple of days after that. So I took him to his pediatrician. And they said, oh, it's probably just growing pains.
They ran some labs. When the results came back slightly abnormal, the doctor chalked it up to a recent cold. But then the pain came back. It got so bad, Corinthian limped when he tried to walk. It took two more visits to the doctor before LaTanya got the call from one of the nation's elite cancer centers.
And it was the nurse saying that I needed to bring him in to MD Anderson immediately because he had leukemia. And I was like, and she was like, your pediatrician hasn't called you? I'm like, no, they haven't told us anything. And it just seemed so unreal, you know, like, it just caught me by surprise.
Childhood leukemia is a rare disease. It's a type of cancer that starts in the bone marrow, where new blood cells are made. LaTanya rushed Mister to the hospital, where a cancer specialist saw him right away.
So he did a thorough exam of him. It wasn't until a little later when I asked him about if leukemia was genetics. And he told me, no, it wasn't genetics, it was environmental.
Environmental. She wondered where it was coming from. The air, the water, what had her child been exposed to?
But not knowing directly what it is, where to start, where to look, you know, that's all it was, is it's environmental.
LaTanya had even more questions when 3 months later, she got diagnosed with breast cancer. But she had to push those questions aside. First, she had to get better and help Mister beat leukemia. Mm-hmm. two blocks from Mister's home, the street dead ends into the Englewood rail yard. You can see the tracks from their kitchen window. The rail yard dates back to the late 1800s and the Southern Pacific Railroad Company. Since at least the 1940s, workers labored there to make railroad ties. They dipped the wood in a tar-like black chemical mixture called creosote. This preserved and treated the wood so they could make the railroad tracks. People of a certain age might remember when virtually everything made of wood outdoors was painted with creosote, like telephone poles and fence posts. Sandra Edwards grew up half a block from the facility on Lavender Street.
And you could see the smoke, the fumes were coming out over in your house.
She says as a kid, it was like a show watching the wood get treated.
You could see the chute where it goes up in the chute, come down, splash everywhere, and then they go park over at the end of the fence and let them just sit there until they got ready to use them.
The rail yard stopped treating wood with creosote in 1984. Then in 1997, Union Pacific, a multi-billion dollar railroad company, took over the site when it merged with Southern Pacific. Trains still pull in and out from the yard as they haul freight across the country. Sandra hasn't forgotten the smell of those chemicals.
You know how you pass by a building that's getting the roof done in the tar and you can barely breathe? It was twice that odor. It was strong like tar and some gas mixed together, and it would take over your breath. You had to gasp before you could actually breathe coming through here.
She says the tar would run off when it rained, and sometimes kids would play in it. Back then, there wasn't a fence around the rail yard. It was in everyone's backyard.
Hey, honey.
Mary Hutchins and Lisa Glenn have homes across the street from Sandra, four blocks over from Mister. They joke around with the mailman.
Somebody putting the wrong mail in the box.
Oh, you getting the wrong mail too?
Yeah, okay. I tried to tell him.
The two friends go back some 40 years. Mary still lives here, and some neighbors keep roosters.
Back then, you had people to look after people, you know, like if somebody's parents, you know, had to work, or somebody, you know, like Mrs. Lee, she would watch, you know, the other kids on the street. You know, it's a community, you know.
Lisa owns the property where her mom raised six kids on her own.
And when you know you always got a place to go, that's a good feeling. So that's the reason I keep the home, because that's what my mom wanted.
Their mothers were friends, too.
And sometimes Mary's mom would come and sit with my mom on the back step where nobody could see them, because it was like the old ladies would get jealous if she would have coffee and cake with somebody else. That's when I found out Mary's mom had a lump in her breast. And my mom told her, well, I got one too.
Both of their mothers eventually died from cancer. More neighbors on Lavender Street started getting sick in the late 1990s and early 2000s.
Pretty much it didn't touch most houses on the street. I've also had thyroid cancer. My brother passed. My mother passed. I had a cousin here to help raise me. She passed.
Miss Coachman had cancer.
Miss Barbara had cancer. I know that some of the French's, Thomas's family, they had cancer.
Johnny and his wife had cancer. And his daughter had cancer.
I know this man had cancer.
For a long time, they suspected what was making so many loved ones and neighbors sick. They point down the road to the rail yard and all those chemicals from the creosote from all those years.
That's why the street now, it looks like a graveyard. It's dead over here because of the contamination.
The concentration of cancer spurred residents to organize and advocate.
Impact Fifth Ward.
Sandra Edwards is the president of the grassroots group.
We are trying to bring Fifth Ward back to life because there's a lot of potential out here. People have robbed us from it.
They met every month at a local church until the pandemic. At demonstrations, they dressed up a Halloween skeleton as Creosote Man. Mister's mother, LaTanya Payne, went to one town hall meeting. Sandra worries about the chemicals that have seeped into the groundwater and if they're coming back as vapors.
Vapors. Just like if you was to sit something on the soil out there, and the sun, it gets hot enough, and you see it starts smoking and the waves, that's cooking it. It's making it come up. And if you're walking in and out of that soil or grass or whatever, you're going to contract this. You're going to pick it up. It's how it stays with you.
That tar-like mixture the rail yard used, creosote, the EPA considers it a probable human carcinogen. It's made up of more than 200 chemical compounds. Cleanup efforts have been ongoing since the 1980s, and Union Pacific has had to test the groundwater and monitor the chemical plume regularly. But it wasn't until recently, in 2014, that residents learned that the toxic plume in the ground had moved underneath more than 100 homes. Then, in 2019, state health authorities confirmed what residents had long believed. They found an official cancer cluster. Adults in two historically Black neighborhoods, Fifth Ward and Kashmir Gardens, had elevated rates of certain cancers, including lung, esophagus, and larynx cancers.
I felt like somebody had stuck their hand in my chest and pulled my heart out.
Sandra got the news from the city's chief environmental officer.
Because she said, everything you thought, it is true. It's right. You were right. And I broke down because you know when you know something and people start telling you you're wrong and you know, like, hell, what you say, I know what I know because I'm sitting here living it, and I would not stop.
That administrator, Lauren Hopkins, keeps a map of the contamination on her conference table at the city health department.
No, I have it out all the time. It's a convenient reminder of, you know, where the contamination is, and we have lots of questions going on about, you know, where sampling has occurred, where sampling should occur.
The map shows the edge of the Union Pacific rail yard. To the north, the houses are numbered and colored bright yellow if the company found contamination underneath. It looks like a neon checkerboard. Some of the highlighted properties belong to Sandra Edwards, Mary Hutchins, and Lisa Glenn. It stops just short of where Mr. lives. It's not the city's job to monitor the plume. It's up to a state agency to regulate the site.
It's affected Houstonians and Houston property. So the mayor feels like they are part of Houston, so it is our business. And we do have a seat at the table to help make sure that the community is safe and to assist them in any way that we can.
One thing the city of Houston did was ask the Texas Health Department to take a closer look at the cancer rates. What came back this January shocked public health authorities and families. They identified a second cancer cluster, this one affecting children. They found 28 cases of childhood leukemia, when health statistics would predict only 16. In one census tract, children had leukemia at 5 times the expected rate. When Sandra Edwards heard the news, she immediately thought of LaTanya Payne's son, Mr.
That's the first person came to my mind. That boy been suffering a long time. I mean, my heart go out to him. Like I said, he don't have a kid's life. He has a medical life.
When Sandra came and, you know, told me about the leukemia thing, it was just more clarity.
That's LaTanya Payne again.
I was very, very angry when I found out about it. And angry because I personally feel like the Union Pacific Railroad knows and knew exactly what was going on. And then for them to continue to say that, you know, they've had the research done and it's not true and isn't, it just makes me very angry. It's not fair to anyone, you know, and especially not fair to the children at all.
The railroad company Union Pacific, in a written statement, expressed sympathy for residents dealing with what they call medical issues. But the company has maintained that decades of testing show no concrete link that residents have been exposed directly to the contamination. And the company is quick to point out that the state health studies were not meant to determine the cause of the cancer. Still, Union Pacific has revised its plan to clean up the toxic waste. They'll install a physical barrier, called a slurry wall, on two sides of the rail yard. It will reach as deep as 75 feet to try and contain the toxic plume. Dr. Robert Bullard has studied how communities of color, like Houston's Fifth Ward, bear the physical and emotional costs of pollution and industrial waste. He's known as the father of environmental justice and wrote the book Dumping in Dixie.
Yeah, I wrote that book 31 years ago.
It explored race, class, and environmental hazards across the southern United States. Bullard found that from Louisiana to West Virginia, it was up to local Black communities to take action against industrial giants to protect their health and homes.
Environmental racism is nothing more than discrimination in the application of environmental laws. It's the same type of structural and institutional decision-making that will send pollution, poison, and other kinds of hazards to a particular community based on race, color, or national origin.
He lists off the causes, going all the way back to 1619 and the roots of slavery, Jim Crow segregation, racism in housing and land use, and the uneven application of environmental rules.
America is segregated, and so is pollution. So the contamination in Fifth Ward and Cashmere Garden in terms of that creosote left by Union Pacific Railroad and those rail yard is basically a textbook case of environmental injustice.
Bullard, who's a professor at Texas Southern University, says this kind of discrimination can affect generations of families.
Racism is more than just, oh, it's bad. No, it can kill you. And sometimes the results occur later on. And those lingering effects of pollution, and like cancer, in some cases, you can be exposed to a chemical and it might take 30 years for that effect to show in terms of cancer. That's what we're talking about. Racism is a cancer. Racism is a disease and needs to be treated like that, because if we don't, we'll allow it to stay invisible and to still impact individuals as well as communities.
In Houston, LaTanya Payne and her son are still living with the impacts of environmental injustice that occurred years before he was born. Mister's leukemia had gone into remission after extended chemotherapy, until it came back last October. The cancer, the treatment, the rail yard, it's hard for LaTanya's son to talk about.
Honestly, I think he either blocked a lot of stuff out or doesn't want to remember certain things about it.
Mister would rather do fun things, like ride his four-wheeler or play with his dogs.
Black Magic. Come here, buddy.
Black Magic is a puppy. He also has Titus, Snow White, and...
That's Chelsea. That's their mom.
Sometimes he thinks about becoming a vet when he grows up.
I know they eat good because sometimes I feed the raw meat, like with their dog food, or I put egg in it, like nutritious stuff, and I make sure their dog food is like really good. Then I clean up the yard a lot, but them puppies find a way to mess it back up.
Since October, Mister has been on a strict medical program, starting with more chemotherapy.
And that chemotherapy killed his white blood cells, any immune system that he had to fight off infection. So he picked up an infection in his forehead.
Doctors had to remove part of his forehead and graft skin from his arm. Corinthian is shy about the scar and often wears a baseball cap. For months, he's been going to the hospital for special antibiotics to protect against more infections.
So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, he goes to MD Anderson for a two-hour drip. He also goes for his labs and follow-ups. So he's usually there from around 8 in the morning till 1 or 2 in the afternoon.
I'm bored, very bored.
For months, Mister's carried a medicine bag with him at all times. It sends anti-cancer drugs directly into his vein through a tube. His family hopes he'll get a bone marrow transplant soon, so the leukemia won't come back. He has a match with his birth mom and is getting to understand the procedure.
They like stick a needle in a chicken bone.
Her bone and get the black stuff out of it.
The marrow.
The marrow and stick it in me or something.
It's a lot that goes into it, even though it doesn't actually require actual surgery. But I'm just ready for the journey with this leukemia to be over so he can be totally healed from it. Right now, that's all my focus is on.
LaTanya's had to take family medical leave from her job to care for Mister. She works for another hospital as a patient coordinator. It helps that she knows how to advocate in a medical setting, though it's never easy seeing your child suffer.
Especially now since he's older, he understands more. He has his opinion about things when it comes to his treatment. He'll tell the doc, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to do this. It's hard to see him have to go through the things that he has been through. Again, it is very hard, and I have to stay strong for him and, you know, be here for him and, you know, just try to make sure he's uplifted and encouraged.
LaTanya wants her son to have a normal childhood again. Go to school, play basketball, be with friends. While Sandra Edwards advocates for children like Mister and her community, she also raises the alarm about the creosote contamination with just about everyone she meets.
How y'all doing today? I'm good. Y'all trying to buy some of this contamination?
Even real estate investors who show up on her street checking out some abandoned homes.
This whole street has a plume under it. All this land is contaminated. I'm the one that called out during the Pacific. I'm the one that blowed this out the water, letting people know this is contaminated over here. This is all contaminated, y'all.
Sandra's focused on accountability. She wants the railroad company, Union Pacific, to pay for people's medical bills, provide health screenings, and relocate residents.
I don't care how much it costs. Do it. Because it's not fair to leave people in a death trap. Wait for them to die. We didn't ask for this.
She says kids like Mister deserve green spaces where they can play safely. And they need more economic opportunity in the neighborhood. The median household income is just over $21,000. Sandra says she's not leaving until they've won justice from Union Pacific. Nonprofit lawyers helping her group are focused on making sure the company follows state regulations.
So this fight is going to be ongoing. They're going to have to deal with me over and over and over.
Hundreds of other residents have joined a class action lawsuit against the railroad company. Some of her neighbors would move if they could afford to. But LaTanya Payne says her family is staying.
We live here because we want to, not because we have to. This is my mom's home. This is her legacy. We want to continue her legacy in this house. We want it to go down, you know, the generations. And this is where we call home. So we don't plan on moving.
What she wants is for Union Pacific to take real ownership of the contamination.
To clean this up. To clean it up so we can live safe and feel safe in our homes and in our community.
LaTanya tells me that her son, Mister, thinks about justice differently.
Because he's a kid and he thinks it's all about money.
How much money would you want from them?
I don't even know.
Like thousands? Would you like millions?
13 million.
13 million? Is that because you're 13 years old?
Yep.
Union Pacific previously offered residents $1,000 if they signed an agreement promising not to use the groundwater. As far as the creosote, the company says it's trying to remove the chemicals where it can. It plans to install more wells and a mobile vacuum system that can travel to different areas. But the thing about creosote, it's very difficult to clean up. It's not a liquid, so it's hard to pump out like water. It's like a tar, so it can stretch and break apart. There's no real estimate on how long it will take to be perfectly clean. What's more, those vapors Sandra Edwards worries about, some testing by the city showed levels of toxins that concerned state health authorities. The contamination is one of many challenges the historically Black community has endured in recent years. Many residents are still recovering from Hurricane Harvey, nearly 4 years after the storm flooded the region. In February, a winter freeze and collapse of the electric grid meant millions in Texas went without power and drinking water for days. It hit vulnerable communities harder. And the ongoing coronavirus pandemic has disproportionately affected people of color.
Best I can say, one day at a time, it's hard.
Sandra Edwards has lived through all this.
You just have to wake up with a positive attitude and say, I'm gonna conquer this. Because you having one disaster after another thrown on you, pounded on you.
So it's more than just talking about cleaning up the waste, but it's also making sure that money is spent to retrofit, to spend money in making communities healthy, resilient, livable, and sustainable.
Dr. Robert Bullard serves on the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. It's a new group formed by the Biden administration to propose ways for environmental equity to be considered in every relevant action of the federal government. Bullard says they're working on new tools, resources, and policies.
That means adding in the green space, the parks, adding in protective devices so that communities don't flood every time it rains, and dealing with access to health care, access to green jobs, all of that.
Bullard says something else that has to change, how corporations get more leeway from the courts and residents bear the burden of proof.
It's hard to fight when you're sick. It's hard for low-income communities and communities of color to fight against these giant corporations, you know, billion-dollar companies. And these companies could just do the right thing and not have to go through this long, drawn-out lawsuits and fights.
Still, Bullard says he's optimistic, especially since he sees that younger generations are joining the movement with urgency, mobilized by Black Lives Matter and George Floyd's murder. He says they're not willing to wait decades for change. Mister's family also has a lot of hope. He's finally been scheduled for a bone marrow transplant. Before he's admitted to the hospital, LaTanya Payne is throwing a party to celebrate.
So we are just gathering together in support for him to, you know, just show him some love. He wanted to have a little gathering, so that's what we're doing here today.
Her brother is frying fish. Mister, who likes to dress sharp, has on a bright red baseball cap and neon green sneakers.
I'm feeling good.
He's here with his cousins, family friends, and his birth mom, Michelle Parker.
I'm just happy we're going to transplant. I'm happy that he gets to spend time with his siblings and his family today before he go into the hospital. And that once we get over this hump, it'll be for good. At least for a long time, we can enjoy his life and have a little fun without having to going back and forth to the hospital, all them different medications. It's been real hard, but I'm thankful that we almost to the end.
The transplant is not an easy procedure. Before, Mister will have more chemo, and after, he'll have to stay in the hospital for about 2 months. He'll be vulnerable to infection because his immune system will be shut down. To get through it, both his moms want Mister to feel all the love. So at the party, the 13-year-old does what he loves most, ride his four-wheeler. LaTanya watches from the yard as he takes a sharp turn.
I'ma get him.
Soon, some special guests arrive. An entourage of cars turns up to support Mister. A bunch of them are his favorite sports car, the Dodge Challenger Hellcat. A crowd lines the street. Family, neighbors, and car fans who've seen the happening on social media. The lead driver is called Hellcat Montana, and he offers Mister a ride in his gray muscle car with hot pink trim. Mister's not so sure at first.
I ain't getting in. No, I'm not getting in. No.
Come on, Corinthian.
I ain't getting in.
He's going to be your ride. He's not going to do no donuts.
Mister finally climbs inside. His dark blue medicine bag hanging over his shoulder. He buckles up, and off they go. They spin around four times before they cruise down Cushing Street. They pass an empty lot, a church, and friends and family, until they reach the end of the street and turn back at the rail yard.
This story was reported and mixed by Laura Eisensee. She's an independent journalist based in Texas. We have a sad update about Mister. He completed his bone marrow transplant, but then experienced complications. He passed away just a few weeks after we finished work on this episode. He was 13 years old. Thanks to Texas Standard, a one-hour daily news magazine heard across the state, for helping us get the word out about this story. Music in this episode is by Lobo Loco and Nine Inch Nails, both used under Creative Commons licenses. And thanks to Smithsonian Folkways Recordings for use of music by the late Texas blues artist Lightnin' Hopkins. The Living Downstream theme music is by David Shulman. I'm your host and senior producer, Steve Mencher. I was the story editor for this episode. Chris Lee is radio executive producer, and Darren Lachelle is the president and CEO of Northern California Public Media. Follow or subscribe to Living Downstream on Apple Podcasts, comment on it and rate it there, and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Lately, a lot of you have been connecting via Spotify. Thanks. You'll also find more about us on NPR One. Visit our website at norcalpublicmedia.org/living. Living Downstream thanks our sponsors who make this podcast possible. A list is available at norcalpublicmedia.org. Write to us today and tell us what you think about our podcast and let us know what's happening in your community. Our address is living@norcalpublicmedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.